Everyone, this is Jazz Chronicles from New York City with Michael Pelias. We're listening to the great Eric Dolphy's quintet doing a version of On Green Dolphin Street. Tonight we're going to be engaging and listening very carefully to the music of the great Eric Dolphy, one of the great, great jazz musicians of the middle to late 20th century, primarily middle 20th century. On Green Dolphin Street was composed by Bronislaw Koper, and the lyrics were written by Ned Washington. And just to give you an idea, this was written for a film, Green Dolphin Street, which starred Van Heflin, Lana Turner, and Donna Reed in 1947, taken from a popular novel of the same title. And in 1960, Eric Dolphy Quintet, which was composed of the great Freddie Hubbard, who you heard on trumpet, Roy Haynes on drums, George Tucker on the double bass, and Jackie Byard on piano performed this as one of the most special versions of it. Obviously, it was popularized by Miles Davis in 1958. And first played by the Jimmy Dorsey Orchestra in a kind of almost a big band setting. So anyway, I want to read a little bit of the lyrics to this song because I think it gives us a taste of the jazz world of that time, of the late 50s and the early 60s, of which Dolphy was one of the great emergent players. It seems like a dream, yet I know it happened. A man, a maid, and then goodbye. Romance was there. And we were the players. I never think of this without a sigh. However, one lovely day, love came, planning to stay. Green Dolphin Street supplied the setting. The setting for nights beyond forgetting. And through these moments, great memories lie in my heart when I recall the lover I found on and I could kiss the ground on Green Dolphin Street. The lyrics go on, but I thought this would give you a sense of the night fever of jazz during this time and how well Dolphy captures this in terms of his alto sax playing here. Eric Dolphy himself was born in 1928, June 20th, 1928, and he passed away, unfortunately, of a misdiagnosis after falling ill at a Berlin concert in which he was taken to a hospital, and he was misdiagnosed as a heroin addict, and he died basically of insulin shock. He was treated because the doctors there stereotypically identified him as a black musician, that is, a junkie, and this is how they treated him. So this was a very unfortunate death, as his good friend and a bassist, a trumpet player who played with him, Ted Kersen, said, Eric Dolphy died for nothing. This is one of the sad events alongside the car accident that took Clifford Brown's life, the early death of many trumpet players. Of course, the tragic lives cut short. So many lives cut short in the jazz world. But the Eric Dolphy is one of the most tragic events of all. Someone who was just emerging, coming into his own as probably in the ranks of the John Coltranes, the Charlie Minguses, the Miles Davises, and Thelonious Monk of his period. Dolphy always said, I try to get the instrument to speak. And the amazing thing about him, he had mastered so many instruments. The alto sax, the bass clarinet, the baritone sax, the flute, the clarinet itself, and the piccolo. He was one of the greatest jazz flute soloists, in my estimation, the greatest, all peace to Herbie Mann and others. And the amazing thing about him is that he did get the instrument to speak. Charlie Mingus remarked about him, who loved Eric, and we had played in an earlier show, So Long, Eric, which was a testament to Eric leaving the Mingus Band, and unfortunately was so long for good a few months later when he died in Berlin in the hospital. Dolphy was a complete musician, Mingus said. He could play and fit anywhere. He was a great lead in a big band. He could make it in a classical group. And it was his own man. When he soloed, he mastered jazz entirely. He was really our modern jazz master, if we could put him there with Duke Ellington, of course, Louis Armstrong, of course, Charles Mingus, Thelonious Monk, Miles Davis, and many others who we don't mention in the same breath as those giants, but we can speak to as very close to them. But Dolphy, in my opinion, is in the Mount Rushmore, if you will, of the jazz greats, of the jazz masters. We were listening to Green Dolphin Street, in which he plays the alto sax. This was his quintet. One claim about Dolphy that he never became the household name that Monk, Miles, Mingus became is that he never really had his own group for a consistent period of time, that he always played with others and played greatly and was tremendously respected, but never really developed his own quintet for a number of years. And of course, his early death probably contributed to this. We're gonna move on. We're gonna play some of his most representative works. I hope it's very representative of his work. We're gonna move on to the second phase of or something that he did from the famous Out to Lunch album. This is called Hat and Beard. We're gonna listen to this for about 3 minutes, and then I'll talk a little bit about what Out to Lunch meant as an album, as well as what it means to a contemporary program here in New York City. Okay, so we'll listen to Hat and Beard. What Dolphy had was a beard and would sometimes wear a very funky hat. That's the Hat and Beard from the Out to Lunch album of Eric Dolphy, recorded in 1964. That's Bobby Hutcherson on the vibes. A tremendously great interplay with the licks of Dolphy that are pretty incredible. If you listen carefully, about a minute and a half into the cut we just heard, you can hear Dolphy really licking like nobody's business, probably changing patterns of bird migration. It's so good the way he is working the sax there. And that's Freddie Hubbard, who kind of came in with the trumpet at the end, a mainstay with many years with Adolphe, as well as Richard Davis on the bass. I mean, what's interesting about this piece is that it really has elements of free jazz. I mean, it's pretty amazing the kind of almost levels of experimentation Adolphe goes to, and, you know, not only the experiments with harmony, but what he's known for is this kind of intervallic, you know, vacillation. I mean, being someone who studies philosophy many years, Adolphe has really this incredible ability to space, you know, in the horns that very, very few artists have. You know, many artists with chops just play. Adolphe is almost totally expert at spacing. Many levels of spacing that we can certainly go back to when we do a little more technical analysis of his music. Out to Lunch, by the way, is a program that has been active in New York City on WKCR, the Columbia University radio station. For the listeners, you know, you can get this on the internet. Out to Lunch is Monday through Friday from 12 to 3 on WKCR, which is 89.9 on the FM dial, and of course you can get this streaming. One of the great jazz stations, maybe the best jazz station in the world, and certainly worth listening to. There's a program in the morning, Bird Flight, which is a tribute to Charlie Parker's music. You know, there are also other new jazz perspectives. And there's a program on the swing era as well. So I recommend it, but Out to Lunch, Adolphe's piece that we're not going to play tonight, but is the title of a 3-hour, 15 hours a week of a jazz program in New York, which features many free jazz artists as well as many of the, you know, current experiments going on among the contemporary jazz musicians. And in my opinion, we're witnessing a kind of, I would say it's almost a kind of a recycling renaissance in jazz, and maybe I'll talk to that on another program, what I mean by a recycling renaissance. There's anthologizing going on, but there is some innovation and a real kind of, you know, renaissance and experimentation in jazz with this generation that came up in the 80s and 90s. It's very interesting to me, especially to an older person like me. Anyway, we're going to move on to another moment in Adolphe's career. This time we're going to hear the vocalist Abby Lincoln, the great Abby Lincoln, who passed away a few years ago here in New York City. Actually was in a nursing home in Harlem, but she had come back from Paris for the last 20 years of her life and performed in many clubs, and I had the pleasure of hearing her. We're going to hear from something that was done during what were called the Newport Rebel Sessions in 1960 at the Newport Jazz Festival, kind of on the sly. This was then published in 1989 in a disc called Candid. And Abby sings, but Adolphe is on this. You'll hear him. And so it's a little nice interlude, you know, in between Adolphe's playing and jazz instrumentals as one of the great jazz vocalists. Adolphe also played with Abby Lincoln and with Abby Lincoln's then husband Max Roach many times. Roach and Adolphe collaborated on many levels, and even though Adolphe wasn't an active voice in the civil rights movement or in the black power movements, he certainly was, or black freedom movements, he certainly was someone subtly speaking to this, and also through his music, and actually was very, very supportive of those musicians, especially the people like Max Roach and Archie Shepp, who were front and center, and of course Mingus, also very front and center. Fables of Phobos, as we've listened during the Mingus program, was also a great piece that was tremendously politically inclined. So let's hear Ain't Nobody's Business But but My Own, If I Do, by Abby Lincoln and Eric Adolphe accompanying this great vocalist. Mm-hmm.
one day. I'm going crazy. Get me a shotgun and shoot my baby. And it ain't nobody's business if I do.
Nobody's business if I do. And with Eric Dolphy on the sax there, that's Benny Bailey on trumpet, a completely forgotten name today, and that's Joe Jones on the drums. So anyway, these were the Newport Rebel Sessions, something that very few people know about, worth listening to, because these were the rebels at the Newport Jazz Festival. These were the anti-conventional, you know, people that were get together and just kind of jam and have a good time. And you can feel it in that music. It's another side of Dolphy, you know, just kind of riffing with the great Abby Lincoln. So I thought that would be a nice interlude, nothing heavy, but a great song, you know. Of course, the great version sung by Billie Holiday as well. But Abby Lincoln does a great job. She was, in my estimation, the heir to Billie Holiday and, you know, a very outspoken person and extremely, extremely militant in terms of black liberation movements, black freedom movements in the early days and when she came back. And in fact, Abby Lincoln is famous for saying, what happened to jazz? Why didn't it become, you know, the main musical form during the 60s? She says, you can blame the white boys from England, the Beatles. So I thought I'd do with that. Okay, we're going to move on to Eric Dolphy live at the Village Vanguard with the great John Coltrane. And I'm going to play a good part of the famous piece, Spiritual, John Coltrane. So you're going to get to hear John Coltrane and Eric Dolphy together up to McCoy Tyner's piece at the Village Vanguard. I wanted to read you something about that, you know, that Archie Shepp said about jazz clubs. This was during the height of the Black Power movements. But he said about the jazz club, an adventure in cockroach capitalism, where it was called, that the jazz clubs are crude stables where black men are run until they bleed or else are hacked up outright for LaPlace's glue. And the response for the jazz club owners were, they're getting paid, what else do they want? So in a way, you know, the Vanguard, even though Max Gordon was extremely good to the musicians and, you know, there were many live recordings, the jazz club has a very, very darkened history in the history of jazz. And we'll probably do a program one time on that and maybe play some music that speaks to this level of the jazz clubs, the levels of the exploitation going on. It still goes on. And for those of you who know the work of Fred Weho, he would not play in jazz clubs because of this level of exploitation. Many other musicians play there because they have to make a living, etc. Fred was good enough to be able to do things outside the clubs at universities and other places. But anyway, I want to play Spiritual. This is one of the great, great collaborations between Coltrane and Eric Dolphy. So we're going to go to that now. Spiritual. really wish we had the time to hear more of Makari Tyner's piano that you got a little glimpse of at the end of that piece, but you got the best of John Coltrane on the tenor sax and the soprano sax, and Dolphy on the bass clarinet. Exceptional work. This is one of the great classics. This is live at the Village Vanguard, recorded on November 3rd, 1961, on 7th Avenue South and 11th Street in New York City. One of the greatest performances ever at the Vanguard, and there were many of them. But this was unbelievable, these two on stage with the horns, the soprano, the tenor, and the bass clarinet. Amazing. That was McCoy Tyner on piano, that we were hearing the beginning of a short solo riff, Ray G. Workman on bass, and Elvin Jones on drums, the only one that could really keep time to keep up and keep pace with John Coltrane, and probably Dolphy too. So I recommend highly to get this disc or to watch it on YouTube. You'll really, really enjoy listening to it multiple times. It's one of the great pieces of the 1960s in jazz. Okay, so we're going to move on. I want to talk just really quickly about Dolphy, and I want to use another quotation from Duke Ellington. It's good to keep this internal. Duke Ellington once said, and I'm going to fit Dolphy into this, never categorize musicians by calling them cutting edge, new, traditional. Get to know one, each one, deeply and fully. I think Dolphy is beyond categorization. You know, this is very important to keep this in mind. And I think Ellington has a great point. If you're going to listen to music, especially jazz music, you should really go into this with a very open mind, without prejudice about saying he plays like this or he plays like that. This is cutting edge. This is new. This is innovative. But to really get to learn the music, because to me, Dolphy has elements of Bartok, Stravinsky, as I was mentioning earlier, these massive attempts to do the intervallic, the wide intervals that he was so expert at, which was obviously influenced by the work of Stravinsky and Bartok. So the classical moment is there as well. So I want to emphasize that the Ellington dictum, if you will, of how to treat musicians, not as categories or as labeling, but to treat them, to understand through their music who they are, what they're trying to convey, will really give you a much deeper understanding and a much deeper appreciation of the form called jazz. So we're going to move on to another piece here. This is something that Dolphy did at the University of Illinois in Champlain, Illinois, near Chicago. It's with the great Herbie Hancock on piano. It was in the 1960s. I think 1963 was the time of this. Yes, it was a 1963. And Dolphy is both on the bass clarinet and the alto sax. Eddie Kahn on bass. J.C. Moses on the drums, who really does a great job of the timekeeper here. And, of course, like I said, Hancock on piano. This is Softly As Is in the Morning Sunrise, right? Live from the University of Illinois in 1963. So we're going to begin to do a ballad of Dolphy to show his range. This will be a very beautiful ballad. So please listen carefully and again with pleasure. Thank you. Pretty amazing, huh? I called it a ballad, but boy, what an experimental ballad. Softly as in the morning sunrise. That's Herbie Hancock on piano. The great J.C. Moses keeping time like nobody's business on the drums. Of course, Dolphy, the amazing interplay with Hancock especially. Eddie Kahn on bass. And pretty amazing. This was at a university in 1963 in Illinois, literally almost about a year before Dolphy unexpectedly passed away. And, essentially, in some ways, killed in the German hospital with a misdiagnosis. We're going to, you probably have a sense now of the range of this masterful jazz artist, Eric Dolphy, and the multiple levels he could go to and who he played with. He began with the Chico Hamilton quintet. He was hired by Chico Hamilton. This was how he really started his career as a regular musician in gigs. Of course, then was part of the Mingus group. As I mentioned, had his own quintet and performed in as the Newport Rebels. That was a very interesting, very compacted career. Again, a person whose life was cut short in his middle 30s, unexpectedly, no telling where he would go. We're going to end the show today with kind of full circle from the beautiful romance of On Green Dolphin Street and all the eeriness and beauty and sublime beauty that On Green Dolphin Street suggests, the beauty of Softly in a Morning Sunrise. We're going to come full circle around to Stormy Weather, the classic written by Harold Arlen in the 1930s. In 1934, Arlen wrote the film, and it was first sung by Ethel Waters at the Cotton Club in 1934. And then this is from the album Mingus put this together with Dolphy. Dolphy is on alto sax here. It's Ted Kersen on trumpet, Danny Richman, a Mingus mainstay, on the drums, and of course Charles Mingus on the bass. We're going to fade out with this. This is one of the great pieces of all time. Certainly we are going from Stormy Weather to Stranger and Stranger Weather Patterns. This is a very, very apt song to end with in Dolphy's case. I do plan to give another program on Eric Dolphy a little more deeper in terms of the formal content of his music, and we may look at some of his compositional for lack of a better term, innovations, if you will, hopefully not categorize him, but at least try to understand more deeply his music. So thank you for listening, we're going to do part of Stormy Weather from the great Mingus album of 1960. Stormy Weather from Eric Dolphy and Charles Mingus, one of the great interplays and duets in the history of the world of jazz. Thank you so much for listening. This is Michael Pelias for Jazz Chronicles. We'll be joining you soon, and I look forward to Dolphy Part 2. We'll probably begin with something very unique and different from the mothers of invention, Frank Zappa, the Eric Dolphy Memorial Barbecue that he did in 1970. Frank Zappa was tremendously influenced by Eric Dolphy. So thank you so much for listening, and we will wrap it up here, and thank you again.